From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The news from the Gulf Coast gets worse. Lawlessness and stunning chaos in New Orleans. Bodies left floating in the water. Thousands, days after Katrina, without food, without water, without medicine. Desperately wondering why help has not come. Here are sounds from this morning.
A huge series of explosions started shaking our hotel.
Now we have no food, no water, nobody's bringing us in. All these trucks and buses go by and they do nothing but wave.
We got people out here that have been stranded for 5 days out here. We got people dying.
They're being forced to a situation where they're starving or dying of thirst. They're breaking the stores and looting them for food.
I have instructed all of our law enforcement personnel at the state and local level to strictly enforce Louisiana laws.
Stop! Come over here! Do not go to Tulane!
Well, the Red Cross just underestimated the challenge of dealing with this flood of refugees.
Not one person from the convention center, not one person from the Red Cross. People's bodies are here. I mean, you've heard the story. This is craziness.
We all know this is an agonizing time for the people of the Gulf Coast. I ask their continued patience if recovery operations unfold.
But patience has clearly run out. Here's New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin today.
They don't have a clue what's going on down here. They flew down here one time, 2 days after the doggone event was over, with TV cameras, AP reporters, all kind of goddamn, excuse my French, everybody in America. But I am pissed.
And the desperation keeps coming and coming, adding up to a relief effort so far gone horribly wrong. A rescue effort that has left citizens in a major American city in the face of a long-anticipated disaster to fend pitifully, violently for themselves. This hour, On Point, anger, hunger, and responsibility for the chaos in New Orleans. We begin in New Orleans with Chris Bury, correspondent for the ABC News program Nightline. We caught him on a dry patch in the French Quarter. I asked Chris to describe the situation in the city today.
Well, today we are seeing more people moving in. We were on a bridge earlier this morning, and we saw some National Guardsmen moving in. We saw convoys of U.S. Marshals. But for the residents of New Orleans who are stuck at places like the convention centers, it's still a deepening catastrophe. And above all, they feel a sense of abandonment. There are no rescue workers. There is no Red Cross. There is no National Guard at the convention center, which is one of the main staging points where people were instructed to go in the first place. So they are bitter, they are angry, they are depressed, they are exhausted, and above all, they feel abandoned by their government.
We heard that bitterness even raged from New Orleans officials yesterday. What's the explanation for why there hasn't been more federal help sooner?
We heard the mayor on the radio, and he was so furious about that he was freely using expletives that one rarely hears from a major public official. We've heard FEMA officials interviewed. We haven't seen many of them on the ground, and we heard the director of FEMA say that in his own defense that this was an ongoing catastrophe, which seems a rather odd rationalization because everyone knew that this was hurricane season and that major hurricanes were likely to develop and that New Orleans, more than any other major city in America, needed to have a plan. We had heard a lot about the pre-positioning that FEMA has done over the years, but we certainly haven't seen any evidence of it here.
Let's look at several pieces of this. First, just the flooding situation. Is the water still coming in from Pontchartrain? Is it pumping out the other way now? How much of New Orleans is flooded and which way is the water going?
Well, as of yesterday, we had heard that Lake Pontchartrain had stabilized so that no more water was in, and from all accounts, it had been receding. Today, we heard that the main breached levee, which is known as the 17th Street Canal, that had been plugged. Rescue workers were able to put massive amounts of prefabricated concrete along with sandbags filled with cement. And as of today, we hear that that levee, the levee which had caused so much of the problem, had been for now. So the water seems to be receding, but great parts of New Orleans, particularly on the east side, remain flooded.
Is there free access in and out of the city at this point? What's the highway situation?
The only access into the city is from the west and over Interstate 10, and officials are only letting in authorized people. Residents of New Orleans are allowed in. Obviously, they're letting in relief workers. They're letting in accredited news media, but they're trying to cut off access into New Orleans.
Chris, two faces to the chaos and desperation we're hearing about, one the humanitarian, the other the lawlessness. First, on the humanitarian side, at this point, how many people are still without food, water, and needing a way out of that city? What's the humanitarian picture?
The last official estimate we heard actually was yesterday, and there have been no good figures yet. But as of yesterday, Mayor Nugent of New Orleans was saying that 300,000 people remained in New Orleans, and their hope was to evacuate 15,000 people, and that it would take 20 days to get everybody out of here. That was the estimate as of yesterday.
That sounds like a very bleak prospect. Are the other tens or hundreds of thousands finding food? Are they having to pillage to do it? What's the picture?
Well, for some people, they are pillaging. Many stores, of course, have been looted, and police have pretty well given up trying to stop that. Today, we understand there is a shoot-to-kill order, and the governor has explained that as saying that police and National Guardsmen have the authority to shoot to kill if they can stop violence. They will not do that to stop looting someone who needs food or water, but if they see a violent crime underway or they see someone aim a weapon at police officer, the orders are to shoot to kill.
What is the explanation for the lawless gunfire we've heard about there? Pillaging for food is one thing. Why people firing on security troops? What's the sense of the city?
To be fair, I believe that's an extraordinarily limited incident. We heard that one shot was fired at a Huey helicopter. We heard one instance of a National Guardsman being shot. Those are the only two confirmed incidents we know of.
Good.
But the explanation for it is simple. When the looting happened, Walmarts and other places that had guns were robbed of their guns. So there is a criminal element. The police chief puts it at about 1% of the population that is out here with weapons, with ammunition, and that is a frightening scenario for police who now will not go into certain neighborhoods. There are places that the police are afraid to go to, and so they are simply staying out.
And what about the inflow of reinforcements that the mayor of New Orleans has begged for? Are they coming in? Are they evident? Are they on the street? Police, National Guard, you name it.
We have seen evidence of more state police coming in. We've seen them driving around this morning in trucks, heavily armed in full SWAT gear. We understand that there are nearly 3,000 National Guardsmen already in New Orleans, and we're expecting several thousand more today.
So, in sum, the crisis is still deepening, stabilizing? How would you describe it, Chris?
There's no question that more resources are coming into the city. So, in that sense, the stabilization process is underway. But the fact remains that there are hundreds of thousands of people here in New Orleans with limited food, limited water, no sanitation, no electricity, and it's going to be a very difficult, tedious, long, drawn-out process to get them evacuated. And that humanitarian crisis has not abated, and it won't abate for several days, if not weeks.
Not to mention the anger at how long it's taken, which one can imagine lasting for years. Chris Bury, we appreciate your joining us from New Orleans. Thanks very much for being with us.
You're most welcome.
Chris Bury is correspondent for the ABC News program Nightline. He spoke with us from the French Quarter in New Orleans. We are talking this hour about the desperation in that city, in New Orleans, and outrage over the response to Hurricane Katrina. You can join the conversation with all the resources, planning, and capacity for foresight of the United States. Did it have to be this bad? In response to disaster, is this the best we can do? Why not better? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me right now is Shirley Laska, professor of environmental sociology at the University of New Orleans, director of the Center for Hazard Assessment and Technology there. She evacuated New Orleans on Saturday. Shirley, thanks for being with us.
Hello.
Simple question to you first. We've just got a minute or so before the break, but is this what we ought to be seeing in the wake? It was a very big hurricane. It was very destructive. Does the aftermath, does it have to be this bad?
It does not, but this is not a natural disaster. This is a human-caused disaster, and all the pieces that were predicted to come together to cause something such as this have happened.
A human-caused disaster, meaning?
The uses of the coastal environment wreaked havoc on its security to protect the city. When the country was warned about these problems, they were not addressed. The poverty is abject poverty in New Orleans, as in many other central cities where people don't have resources to respond, not even to day-to-day, but for something like this. And finally, the emergency response capacity for natural disasters has been reduced tremendously by shortages in budgets. And this is what you see as the result.
Are we going to see here people in Mississippi, in New Orleans, and Louisiana seething about this for a long time?
Absolutely. And I hope it's the entire country that has that reaction.
We're going to look at exactly what's going on and why, what hasn't happened and why in this hour. Our hearts are going out to the people in New Orleans, those hungry, those thirsty, those threatened by lawlessness and violence. Shirley Laska's joining us from Lafayette, Louisiana. We'll have much more when we come back. You can join this conversation. Did the aftermath of Katrina have to be this bad? Why is it so bad? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking this hour about chaos and responsibility in New Orleans and the ugly aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. You can join the conversation. Did it have to be this bad with all the resources of the United States? Is this the best we can do? And what do you see in the squalid scenes of hunger and despair in New Orleans? What do you see in the looting and lawlessness? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. President Bush this morning admitted that the relief effort has fallen short. The president was on his way to tour the Gulf Coast region. He should be there later this morning. He's with Homeland Security Director Michael Chertoff. He made this statement outside the White House.
A lot of people working hard to help those who've been affected, and I want to thank the people for their efforts. The results are not acceptable.
Not acceptable. The mayor of New Orleans, Ray Nagin, much more plain-spoken. I keep hearing that help is coming, he said. This is coming, that is coming. My answer to that is BS. Where is the beef? He said they're feeding the people a line of bull. They are spinning and people are dying. They're the words of the mayor of New Orleans. We're joined in this hour by Shirley Laske. She joins us from Lafayette, Louisiana, professor at the University of New Orleans, director of the Center for Hazard Assessment and Technology there in New Orleans until Saturday. From Columbia, South Carolina, by Susan Cutter, director of the Hazards Research Lab at the University of South Carolina, an expert on emergency preparedness. Susan Cutter, thank you for being with us. Susan Cutter, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thanks for joining us this hour. Jack Beatty, On Point News Analyst, is with us as well from Hanover, New Hampshire. Jack, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Susan Cutter, your first assessment of what the country and the world have seen unfolding in New Orleans this week after Katrina. How do you interpret what's going on there?
I have been doing disaster research for nearly 25 years, and I've never seen anything like this. And I concur with my colleague and friend Shirley Laska on the nature of this as a human-caused disaster.
A human-caused disaster, and we'll look at that, but what about the human response to the disaster? How much of this, human cause or not, it came in the form of a storm and flood waters. Assess the relief effort for us. The mayor of New Orleans is just jumping out of his skin with anger about it. Is he justified?
We had very good predictions on the landfall of this storm at least 36 hours prior to landfall. The resources that should have been brought to bear and pre-positioned around the New Orleans area, I don't think were sufficient. I think there was an underestimation of what would be necessary, and I think part of that is directly related to the downsizing of FEMA within DHS.
Now, when and why has FEMA been downsized within the Department of Homeland Security?
It was a reorientation of the Department of Homeland Security toward terrorism and terrorist activities. It's an agency that was married together with lots of other agencies, and in that process, things got shoved aside. The national ethos was to fight the terrorists rather than, in many ways, to protect Homeland Security and to respond to disasters. We've lost a lot of expertise in FEMA over the years since 9/11. The lessons of 9/11 in terms of communication systems were not in place in the New Orleans area, and this is the result of some of that ineffectiveness in that agency itself.
But Shirley Laska, are these two veins of preparedness so very different? I mean, if this is the best we can do in the case of a natural disaster, with all the human elements that you describe, can we be confident about what might be a terrorist attack? I mean, I'm looking here, Michael Brown, director of FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, saying that the agency failed to anticipate the total lack of communication, the inability to hear, and he's saying they don't have good intelligence on the ground about what was occurring there. We're not talking about Fallujah here. We're talking about a major American city. If they can't do it for this kind of disaster, can we feel confident they're any better positioned for a terror attack?
I think you've answered your own question, Tom. The goal, as Susan indicated, was to have a bigger and better disaster response organization after 9/11. But what happened was that the all hazards concept did not continue to be retained. And as the money shifted to specific homeland security needs, it shrunk so tremendously in the natural disaster area that you were not able to transfer the growth in improved capacity on the homeland side to the natural disaster side.
Jack, I want to begin to just get your perspective here. We're looking around the world and kind of global shock at the scenes coming out, the images of disorder coming out of the United States, looters, debris-strewn streets, hungry people. The headline in The Sun in London, anarchy in the USA. In Germany, the Handelsblatt Daily, apocalypse now. I mean, Reuters is even quoting people in Sri Lanka where the tsunami hit saying they're disgusted by what they see. In the United States, here's one Sri Lankan saying, not a single tourist caught in the tsunami was mugged. Now, with all this happening in the U.S., we can easily see where the civilized part of the world's population is, and he does not mean the United States of America. Justified, Jack, or is this a hurricane we're dealing with here, after all?
It is a hurricane, and there is the human disaster after it, but there's also the, as our guests say, the social and political disaster. That is, priorities have been set here. Article after article has now come out that the levees, which broke, the money appropriated for them was reduced. And, in fact, last year, Bush proposed spending only 20% of the money that was requested for that by the Army Corps of Engineers. They did spend some more. The reason given, at least by the Army Corps of Engineer people, was the money was needed for homeland security and for the war in Iraq. That's a priority. And it wasn't building up those barriers. And on the refugees, it's come out now that in 2002, the Times-Picayune ran an extensive piece predicting every part of this, that there would be 100,000 people left in the city, that there would be no electricity, that there'd be no phones, all the rest. And FEMA says they're caught unawares. And, of course, FEMA, I mean, it used to be a cabinet-level it would come in, the FEMA director would come into cabinet meetings. No more. This has been downgraded. The Los Angeles Times, in a headline, they say, FEMA systematically downgraded and all but dismantled by the Department of Homeland Security. Now, those are political issues. That is, choices of priorities that have impinged catastrophically on the citizens of New Orleans.
And yet, nations always have to make choices. We want to be understanding. There's a huge disaster that's unfolded here, and still, we want to hear more voices from the path of the storm. We're joined right now from Winstonville, Mississippi, by Mayor Milton Tutwiler. He is about 300 miles from the Gulf Coast, not happy with what he has seen. Mayor Tutwiler, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome, Tom. Thank you for having me.
What's your assessment of how the country, the federal government, has responded so far to Hurricane Katrina in your area?
Tom, let me put it this way. First, I must take my hat off to my governor, Governor Barbara, who has been a true champion in dealing with the crisis that we're facing in Mississippi and also in Louisiana and Alabama.
Mm. Haley Barbour has been very outspoken. On the other hand,
very outspoken for Louisiana, Alabama, and, you know, of course, for Mississippi. I mean, he has been on the scene. He has stepped up to the plate.
But, Mayor Tutwiler, you're seeing the same pictures that we're seeing. You're seeing them right outside your window.
That's correct. The true story, Tom, hasn't been told. Once the dust settles with all of this, you're going to find a lot of dead bodies, a lot of people.
But what is the story behind the failure to respond more effectively and quickly? Why is this going on, Mayor Tutwiler?
I cannot answer that, Tom. Like some of the residents or the citizens of those areas, especially in New Orleans, they ask, where were the federal government 3 days ago? I mean, they asked that question on Thursday when it hit Monday.
Mm-hmm. And why not Monday? Why not Tuesday? Why not Wednesday?
Yeah, it's too little too late.
Do you have refugees in Winstonville, Mayor Tutwiler?
I don't call them refugees. I call them American citizens.
Amen. I'm with you there.
They're American citizens. They're not refugees. Mm-hmm. But we have people in Cleveland, which is 12 miles from Winstonville. I got calls right now. We are in need of beds to go to life centers at churches. We got people feeding people out the pocket. Sleeping people as we speak. There are other black males coming out of Missouri with water and personal items for females and babies and just the necessity of life.
People really working to get help in there, but a trail of tears still coming out. Mayor Milton Tutwiler in Winstonville, Mississippi, thank you very much for being with us, sir.
You're welcome, sir.
And Haley Barbour credited there with standing up and speaking out about this. On the other hand, we see the mayor of New Orleans, Ray Nagin, right at the heart of all this, saying he wants a moratorium on press conferences until he's actually got the resources to help people in the city. I want to turn to our callers. Babs is calling from Washington, D.C. Babs, you're on the air. What do you see? What do you know?
Oh, well, I'm actually just pulling into the city for the first time. We're on our way to our new home. Our old home is in Uptown New Orleans. We're not sure where it is or how it's doing. You know, we live a few blocks off St. Charles, so I hear there's looting, but who knows?
And what do you make of the aftermath there? Did it have to be this bad?
Well, I actually, you know, being a native of New Orleans and then someone who got out and got a college education elsewhere and chose to move back, I think we're seeing the city pay for its choices. You know, none of the people have ever been educated properly. You know, no one knows how to take care of themselves. No one, I mean, people, you're seeing, it's, I mean, these are not all of New Orleans.
But who can take care of themselves properly when there's no food and no drinking water?
I'm referring to the behavior in the aftermath.
You mean the looting?
Yes.
Is that because of a lack of education or a lack of money?
All of the above. It's a class thing. Like a couple of the people who started your show off were saying, it's something because the people who are capable, the people who were able, the people who, you know, had the resources were able to get out. And now the people who are left were the people who did not have these because for the past 50 years we've never cared about it.
Babs,
cared to teach them better.
Babs, we're glad that you're safe and out of New Orleans, and we wish you well. We hope your home is in decent shape, and thank you for calling. Shirley Laska, what about the social issues, the social structure in New Orleans and beyond? There's the hunger side of this, and then there's the looting and shooting side of this. The governor of Louisiana saying today, basically, shoot to kill.
Well, I see a quote from Mike Brown on one of the websites, director of FEMA, referring to people in New Orleans who are stuck in New Orleans, stranded there. He said that they were too poor to afford the means to leave. I mean, this is a story about impoverishment and what happens to people when such impoverishment occurs in the United States. And as the Sri Lanka reference made, is that it doesn't make any difference whether you're in the United States or in a third world country. If you are as poor as people in New Orleans are, you are at risk, extreme risk, to lose your life in such a disaster.
And yet, Susan Cutter, just simple questions. For example, the convention center in New Orleans, where we've seen these terrible scenes, just desperate people dying in deep hunger, while the country is watching on. Why is that excusable by any standard? How could that happen? Thousands of people in a known emergency center, hungry.
I don't understand it. And what you see playing out on the nightly news is really a class system and a class divide in this nation. Just because you're poor should not mean that you should not get help in evacuating and getting out of harm's way, and it's a travesty.
Can you imagine an explanation for it? That the people were told, go here, food will come. Just practically, logistically, how could it be that that didn't happen once they assembled and they were known to be there?
I don't think that the city and the counties and the state were really prepared, and the backup from the federal government was not there. This is not a new scenario. We have known about this scenario for a while. It has been practiced. These plans, these emergency plans, have been practiced. Shirley Laska has written about this mm-hmm. scenario. The Times-Picayune articles a couple of years ago mentioned this. There's no excuse for this.
And yet we're seeing it right in front of our eyes. Francis is calling from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hi, Francis. You're on the air. What do you think?
Hi. I'm just disheartened and disgusted, and I'm embarrassed for our country. I want to know, why wasn't there a plan and a procedure made to get the poor and disabled people out of there before the tornado hit?
The hurricane,
I think there are many charitable organizations who would have helped do this had it been organized.
Yeah, let us pick it up. Shirley?
I can address that, yes.
Yes, please.
You are absolutely correct. The efforts had been begun to develop what is called Operation Brothers Keeper, to have the faith-based community have their congregation members partner those with cars and those without cars.
Mm-hmm.
And this process had just begun this year, of collaboration of the city and the Red Cross and the faith-based and the university. But all that we could really do in that is to bring to the attention of the community the fact that this was such a serious problem. It was just a drop in the bucket of a process that needed to be undertaken. The city also has an emergency manager, Chief Matthews, who was newly appointed and is very committed to trying to find methods of evacuation, speaking with Amtrak officials, cruise boat owners, also with all the buses within the area, and plans to have buses brought in. So there was starting to be a possibility of this kind of plan put in place. But when you have poverty, you have people who are very ill. You have what I call ambulatory special needs. And we came to realize that the elderly, the people with illnesses that aren't addressed because there isn't adequate health care, were all going to be at high risk during these evacuation processes. And so the tremendous challenge of this kind of evacuation is just starting to be told in terms of the emergency responders, and the city was nowhere near ready to practice what's starting to evolve as a plan.
We see it. We're told U.S. Navy hospital ship USNS Comfort is on its way, but it won't be there until next week. And you've seen the pictures in the meantime. Susan Cutter, Shirley Laska, Jack, please stand by. We have to take a short break. We're talking about chaos and responsibility in New Orleans and the ugly aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. You can join us. What are you hearing from family, friends, rescue workers along the Gulf Coast? Is this response a national disgrace? And how much blame goes to nature? How much to us to to the National Guard in Iraq, to tax and budget cuts, to poor planning. 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com, and Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital. For more than 60 years, helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at chaos and responsibility in New Orleans today, trying to sort out exactly what's gone on there and why. How can it be that so many are still hungry so many days after this hit? You heard the president say, saying this morning, this is unacceptable. Well, yes, but why? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. We're joined this hour by Shirley Laska of the University of New Orleans, by Susan Cutter, University of South Carolina. Jack Beatty is with us as well. The sounds and messages out of New Orleans have just been hard to hear the last few days. The scenes of hunger, of thirst, of lawlessness there. The governor of Louisiana talking very tough. More troops in the street, she's saying. They're battle-tested. They have M16s that are locked and loaded. These troops know how to shoot and kill, and I expect they will. There's the crackdown part. On the other hand, you have New Orleans' own Director of Homeland Security, Colonel Terry Ebert, saying the rest of the goddamn nation can't get us any resources for security. We're like little birds with our mouths open, and you don't have to be very smart to know where to drop the worm. It's like FEMA has never seen, or never been to, a hurricane. That's not what we want to hear. 1-800-423-8255. Monique is calling from Prince George's County, Maryland. Hi, Monique. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm with the mayor. I agree with the mayor of New Orleans. I think it's terrible that they still have people that's been there for 5 days without food and water. They're sending the National Guard, the police officers, and all of these other kind of people there to control the looting. I don't understand. Why can't they bring bottled water or some type of food for these people to eat? Everyone's complaining about the looting. I can't imagine being in that type of situation, having my family with me, loved ones that are dying in front of you, and still being in the right frame of mind. I just think that this is terrible as an American citizen to see people being treated like this in New Orleans, that day five that they're still talking about help is coming. Why hasn't it been there maybe Tuesday or Wednesday?
Yeah, it's a long time, and the clock is still ticking. Monique, thanks for calling. Susan Cutter, we really want, at the same time, we see the scenes, but we want to be fair. This was a very big storm. People were told to leave New Orleans when the storm was on the way in. Are we asking too much of the government to avoid the kind of scenes we've seen there now? Is this just a fact of nature at some level? What's happened?
No, Tom, I think what we're seeing is, in many ways, the evacuation of New Orleans was successful in that so many people were able to get out.
80%, we're told.
Absolutely, and that's a very good success. Now, having said that, I think there was an underestimation of the magnitude of the disaster, and that underestimation of the magnitude coupled with the social conditions that we've been talking about this past hour have resulted in this humanitarian crisis, and that's what we're really looking at now.
Mm-hmm. But surely we're trying to figure out how much blame to put on the government for these scenes. The storms can only be anticipated to a certain point. You don't know exactly what it's going to be. You don't know for sure a levee's going to break. Is it too much to ask for better than this?
Well, 2 points. One, a piece of data for Susan's comments. There are 57,000 households in the Central City County, that's about 125,000 people,
mm-hmm.
who live in households that do not have automobiles. So that's 125,000 of the 20% that's left who simply did not have a way to get out.
Well, I mean, there's a storm coming. You can hitch a ride, grab a bus. You don't have to own a car to move always.
There were no buses out.
So maybe you do.
The buses were used to bring people to points and then to take them to the Superdome and the Convention Center.
And that was it. And that
and
was
the
it.
Other buses were contracted commercially by other institutions to take out their dependents. In other words, nursing homes, the dormitory foreign students and universities, people who also needed a way out.
Shirley, let me ask you this. You know, there's an emotional component to the aftermath of a disaster. I mean, we see what happened, how bad the damage, and people's emotions are very high. We want to sort that out from a kind of fair, critical critique of what's going on here. In the anger of the response, do you see, is this just the kind of unleashed emotion because people see so much pain, or is this justified anger?
Well, it is because they see pain, and they see pain in a contradictory situation. It's a pain in the United States where we don't believe that this should have to happen, and that's the shock. And you always, you know, as a human being, you always are surprised by a situation that's totally out of place. This kind of suffering in an industrialized society with the resources we have is totally out of place, and that generates the anger.
And we're hearing that in the country and around the world. I want to welcome to our conversation right now Will Bunch. He joins us from Philadelphia. He's a senior writer at the Philadelphia Daily News. Writes the blog Attitude. He's been following closely what the New Orleans Times-Picayune has been writing about for a long time, the failure to shore up those levees. Will Bunch, thanks for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure.
How far back does the awareness that the levees were not sufficiently strong go?
Well, it goes way back, actually, as far back as the 1960s, and I guess the aftermath of Hurricane Betsy that struck the city back in, I think, 65. And in 1995, or 10 years ago, there was an increased recognition that something had to be done. They had a severe rain event that caused major flooding, and six people died. And at that time, Congress stepped in to authorize a major increase in funding for a project that was going to study the city's levees, do a number of projects to improve them or shore them up in key locations, and also to upgrade the system of pumping stations that are supposed to pump out the city when there's a flood.
And the scandal that the Times-Picayune has chipped away at for so long?
I guess the scandal was the sudden drying up of the money, in the sense that much of the project was carried out, a good, you know, three-quarters of it was, but the job wasn't finished, and suddenly around the 2003-2004 period, the money just started drying up, and the Times-Picayune stories you referenced were just kind of their ongoing coverage of what's happening with these flood abatement levee projects, and in each of these stories, the Army Corps of Engineers officials who were based in New Orleans were saying that they suddenly didn't have the resources to do some of this work, and in a number of stories, they made it clear that the big problem was the shifting of the priorities, that money was being diverted to the war in Iraq.
So they're connecting the dots and connecting it right to the war effort. Was that explicit?
Explicit. In fact, I counted nine separate stories dealing with levee problems where there was some reference to Iraq being a source of diverting funds. Or, you know, it's complicated. I mean, you had direct diversion of Army Corps of Engineers resources and certainly Pentagon resources, of course, you know, which has spent billions of dollars fighting the war. On top of that, in the larger federal budget process, you know, we all know the federal budget's been squeezed because of Iraq, because of Homeland Security, and also because of the major tax cuts. And you would have to guess something's being cut in a situation like that, and it is. It's domestic programs like this one. And in fact, although the upcoming fiscal year hasn't started yet, and of course now everything's off the table, but before this happened, the Bush administration was proposing the steepest cut in funding for this New Orleans project ever.
We're assuming that will turn around by necessity now. Will Bunch with the Philadelphia Daily News, thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Let's take a call. Mary is calling from Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
Good to have you. What do you think?
Well, I tell you, I thought the gentleman on before me, Will, really made a few excellent points. To me, this was no shock. What happened or the aftermath. And I have to think, am I the only one around that's not wringing her hands saying, oh, I can't believe this is going on? because in my mind, you know, and I'm no expert on anything. I'm just a private citizen with a very long memory.
And what do you see? What do you remember?
Well, you know, I remember 25 years ago when Ronald Reagan was coming up, and he excoriated government. Government was the enemy. Government had to be starved. Government, you know, taxation, you had to shrink government till it was something you could drown in the bathtub.
But we've had a lot of economic growth since Ronald Reagan, Mary. That's added to the wealth of the nation.
Now, I tell you something. This whole anti-tax crowd, this whole let's starve the beast, when you starve the beast that's government, this is what you get. You get situations that throw us into a third world paradigm. Where do people think tax money goes? Tax money goes to shore up levies. It goes for infrastructure. It goes to help private citizens.
Mary, we've got your perspective, and we've got it loud and clear, and we appreciate your calling in from Gettysburg. I want to get another caller here, if I may. Eric is calling from Washington, D.C. Eric, how do you see it?
Good morning. Well, I think the starving the beast is quite inaccurate. I don't think that's the problem at all. The problem is the people who didn't evacuate.
What if they couldn't? What if they didn't have cars? There were no buses going out? They didn't have the money to buy their way out?
Well, this is what I think. I think if someone came and got them a ticket to a game at the Superdome, I think they'd have managed to get a ride down to the Superdome. I think the same thing holds true, and I don't think this is government's problem. I think that everyone should be outraged at these people for not evacuating. They had notice. This is the 21st century. They could have managed to get a ride.
So it's all about personal responsibility, even the old and the impoverished and the lame and the halt, Eric?
As a matter of fact, yes.
There's another view, Susan Cutter. You hear two really sort of polar views there with Mary and Eric. Mary says, we brought this on ourselves with the way we've handled our resources. Eric says, come on, take responsibility. There's a storm coming. Get out of town one way or another.
I think that's easy to say when you have the resources to get out of town. If you don't have the resources to get out of town, then you hunker down as best you can and you hope that your federal government and your state and local governments will help you with that safety net. So I think we've got some serious problems in this country. Yes, our wealth is increasing, but the disparities between those that have the wealth and those that do not is widening.
And we can see that on display this week in New Orleans. Rhody is calling from Boston. Hi, Rhody, you're on the air.
Hello. I just wanted to tell people that the official evacuation, mandatory evacuation, was announced on Sunday.
Yes.
I live in Boston, but I'm from the city of New Orleans, mm-hmm. and the only people that were able to get out were the people who left on Saturday before the mandatory evacuation.
Because the roads were clogged? Why?
The roads were clogged by Sunday. There's only one way in and out. By Sunday, I-10 was a parking lot. There was no gas. If you had money to get gas, there was no gas. If you had a car, you couldn't fill your tank. All the people that are still in the city, they have no cars. They have no money for gas. Gas was high before this storm, and they had no place to go if they got in the car. And this is before the hurricane.
So,
these people are the ones who are the most vulnerable, and that made them especially vulnerable. But the most important thing that I wanted to tell people, I just got off the phone with my sister. We have a network of people all over the country who are getting information, bits and pieces. They released prisoners onto the bridge in New Orleans.
Yes, we saw that. They were kept there because the prison was flooded. Is there a problem with that?
The issue is that those people are out and they're mingling amongst the regular citizens who are just trying to live. And a lot of the people that are doing the looting and the violence, those people were there before. And those are the people that are left. And so it's a greater, it's like everybody, they're looting and all that. That is not New Orleans. New Orleans are kind, law-abiding, hard-working people. And people focusing on the looting is desensitizing the rest of the country to this problem.
Rhody, we hear you, and we hear your emotion. We hear it loud and clear. We also hear that very tough response from the Louisiana governor. What is it you believe, Rhody?
I believe that this situation could have been prevented. If you grew up in New Orleans, everyone knows that levee is a life support system to keep the city dry. And if the funds had been made available and the priority had been set to make that level 30 feet, that it could withstand level 5 storms, this situation would probably have still happened, but it would not have been as devastating as it is.
Rhody, we've got it, and we appreciate your call. Our time is running short here. I want to get one more call. Jennifer's calling from the Quantico Marine Base in Virginia. Hi, Jennifer. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I am mostly, I mean, other than the devastation and the destruction and the loss of lives, am just extremely upset about the politicians coming on TV. And it seems to me that no single elected official has come out and said, you know what, we've dropped the ball. No one is taking responsible for it.
President Bush said this morning this is not acceptable. Is that good enough?
Well, I think that, you know, I am not a George W. Bush supporter, but I think that this is the first time in his administration where I've actually said he's gotten something right on. I was extremely pleased to hear the president, out of all the elected officials on TV, actually take responsibility for this.
And yet there's taking responsibility rhetorically, and there's taking responsibility on a larger plane. Jennifer, thank you for your call. Susan, Shirley, Jack, we just got a couple of minutes here. Susan, final thoughts on what Americans should be learning and taking away from the images we're seeing out of New Orleans from along the Gulf Coast?
I think we have many, many lessons that we will learn from this disaster. And I'd like to see a national commission where we can look at this analytically to see what went right and to try and identify those gaps where it didn't go well and to make sure that this doesn't happen again.
Mm. And Shirley Laska in Lafayette, Louisiana this morning, your final thoughts on the learning to be done here?
The nation needs to focus its attention on the state of Louisiana and help it restore its coastal marshes and have the levees that are necessary and have a disaster response that is adequate for all people, not just the well-to-do.
Can we afford that? Can that be done?
We can if we devote the resources to it, yes.
We must.
And we haven't. Susan Cutter in Columbia, South Carolina, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
Thanks, Tom.
And Shirley Laska in Lafayette, Louisiana at the University of New Orleans. Shirley, thank you very much for joining us.
And thank you, Tom.
Jack, here we are, a disaster, and suddenly we're talking about the organic whole of the country, how it kind of fits together and where that produces strengths and where that produces weaknesses.
Yes, and how it finds those weaknesses, the chronic poverty, the chronic, we have to say it, racially skewed poverty that characterizes so much of America's inner cities, and how that affects decision-making at all levels of government. And what we see here in New Orleans now is the breakdown of the social contract. There are two sides to that. The citizen agrees not to use force privately, and the government says, we will protect you in return. That's broken down on the government side. Now it's possibly breaking down on the citizen side.
Mm. These troops know how to shoot and kill, and I expect they will, says Louisiana Governor Kathleen Blanco. Let's hope it doesn't come any further to that. Let's support New Orleans and the Gulf. Jack, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.